Welcome back to For the Love of Food, Michael Warren Thomas. I'm not sure when I last interviewed John Vito. It was a while ago. He was working on videos about how he's a chef who had kidney disease and still does, but has really spent quite a few years now trying to help other patients with food and what you do as a kidney patient. So, John, when did you find out you had kidney disease and start having to think about what you're eating and how that affected your kidneys?
The first moment I found out was when I was in the hospital. That's when they told me I was in the ICU because I was so sick. And when I awoke, they told me that my kidneys were failing and they didn't know, or had failed basically at that point. And they were looking for the reasons. So there's a little bit of a time period where you're just in shock and you know, depression or anxiety. There's a lot of things almost similar to the grief stages that you go through. But that's when I found out it was in 2011 and September, and I was immediately put on dialysis. And I stayed on dialysis for 5.5 years.
And for people who don't know they've heard about kidney patients on dialysis, but maybe they don't realize the impact on your daily life of all those hours. What's the dialysis schedule for the average patient?
There are two types of dialysis. One's a peritoneal, which means that it's a solution they insert into your belly area, and that kind of goes on several hours of the day back and forth, and you do that every day. And there is a hemodialysis, which is kind of a cleaning of the blood directly, and most people do that 3 times a week, usually 4 hours a day. But the impact of that is it's very stressful on the body, and you often lose the entire day. So you may only be there for 4 hours, but there's a good total of 24 hours where you could be just foggy, unable to do stuff, and that's a real problem.
I remember one of our earlier interviews, you were trying to schedule the interview around when you thought you would feel good, because it's somewhat unpredictable, but also, you know, on a day you've had chemo, or not, dialysis, that you might not be the best day to do an interview and work on things like this. So you're a chef. Obagalos, people still remember that fondly as a great lunch breakfast place on State Street. And so you bring a perspective to kidney disease of really knowing food and the production of it, the sources of it, all of these things. And why is that helpful for a kidney patient? What's the challenge with deciding what to eat as a kidney patient with renal disease?
I think there are two levels at least. The first one is more of a personal level for the individual. Once your kidneys fail and you need this to be connected to this machine, you're dependent on that, and you lose a lot of control over many things in your life. And food becomes one thing you can control, and you want to be able to have that in your life if that's important to you, because they're constantly harping you on what do you eat, because the second part of this is the food that you intake is going to have an impact on your body, because your kidneys can no longer balance all the nutrients that your body takes in. So certain things could become too high and become dangerous, or they could become too low and become dangerous. So you're constantly trying to adjust your food intake in order to help balance out your body's nutrients when the kidneys doing what the kidneys used to do.
But it's also not the same for every patient, right? I think you told me earlier, it varies tremendously.
So this is where the big difficulty comes in. Each patient is completely different. If I'm in a room, a dialysis room, or if you are early stages of kidney disease, your doctor could see 10 patients and not one of them would have the same nutrient imbalance or potential issue. For instance, we had a group of 4 people that I was friends with in my little dialysis section, and each one of us had a very different issue. I had a hard time controlling my phosphorus, which is very dangerous. The gentleman one of my friends to my left, he had a real problem with potassium. The woman on my right, we always talked about it, even though, because we became friends, so we would all discuss it and kind of be our own support group. But she had a problem with proteins. And the fourth gentleman, he had issues with just malnutrition. Like he just couldn't get enough nutrients in him. So we had all these other issues. So each patient has a different issue. So their food intake has to be different. So if one food item is acceptable to patient one, it may not be acceptable to patient two because they don't have the same potential problems.
So, well, first of all, you mentioned you have a cookbook just came out to address some of this. And that is now available. It's I think you said Greenwood Books locally and then also online.
Yes. The book it's on the Amazon website. It's on the Barnes & Noble website. Locally, it's available at Greenwood Books on East Avenue. Fran Lee has been very helpful in helping me get this published and getting it, getting my knowledge base of the business up to speed so that I could at least get this project done.
You're a restaurateur, you're not a publisher, so you got to learn a whole new business.
And it is. Every business is an entirely new business. You know, there are similarities that you can apply, but there's lots more that's new than there are things that are similar, especially with those two.
So Leah Greenwood's been your mentor in the publishing world?
Yeah, Friendly's been great. She helps me just kind of guide my way. She used to be a distributor or a publisher's rep and sold to small bookstores, and now she owns her own. So she's guided me through it.
So it's Cooking for Your Kidneys, Recipes, Nutrition, and Food Science for Chronic Kidney Disease. And I like the fact that you list your bio underneath your name on the cover of the book, dialysis patient, chef, restaurant owner, and transplant recipient. You had the transplant a couple of years ago now, right?
Just past my two-year anniversary, which is a big deal because kidneys have... they have a lifespan too. So when you have a transplanted organ, there's going to be a lifespan. So the longer they do well, there's an initial stage that you want to make sure it kind of incorporates and maintains. There's a second level which says, can you maintain the lifestyle necessary, take your medications and adhere to the protocols? And then you just try to maintain that as long as you can.
So there are, like you said, other books about food and recipes for people with kidney disease. But you have a unique perspective. You've not only had the disease, but had the transplant also, which that must involve a whole other side of nutrition and food going through that process. But then you're a chef, and you understand where food comes from, the sources, a lot of the food science behind it. So this you're kind of perfectly positioned to do this. You didn't set out to do this, but you're trying to help patients with that unique combination of skills you have.
Yeah, that's you're right. I didn't set out to have kidney disease or to write this book. But when I did find myself in that position, I started doing the research myself, looking at all the materials available, looking to learn as much as I can so that I could do whatever I could on my part to learn what my role is going to be in caring for and trying to stay healthy or alive. The beginnings are generally selfish. What am I going to do? What can I do? And because of my background in food, you learn quickly that other than, let's say, adhering to doctor's advice and making sure that you are compliant, which is a really big issue, you can also kind of control your dietary intake. And that can help, and there are benefits as long as you work with your nutritionist and your doctor so you know what yours are. So when I started looking at all the materials and I started to absorb what was available, I learned a lot, but I found that there was a big gap. And this is where the gap I thought was important. There was great information from nutritionists and doctors, and they were really helpful. So, and they do give you some food items you should eat for your particular issue, but there was a gap between what they, all their great knowledge, and how to get to the dinner plate. And that's where I thought I could fit in and help out. So my understanding now of the disease and the nutritional elements, I could then do a deeper dive into particular ingredients and then how to choose from the same ingredient and to provide some food item that I know people liked because of my years in the restaurant business.
Yeah, having something that you like to eat is a world of difference. But how you cook any particular, broccoli may have lots of iron or whatever nutrients, but how you cook it impacts those nutrients, but also impacts how your body can absorb them, how it can process that food in general. So it sounds simple that you should eat more broccoli, I'm not sure broccoli is good for kidneys. I didn't.
It's an acceptable item for most kidney patients. Not all, but most.
I just picked that out of the air. I should have looked at your book here for ingredients. But again, that whole process, has an impact on how your body processes it and the success you'll have in absorbing those nutrients.
And that's a really important factor, not only in general, I think, for people, but for people with kidney failure. And I pointed out in the book, I mean, that's one of the gaps I wanted to learn about, is absorption is actually a section in there where I talk about how the different cooking processes will affect absorption. For instance, if you boil certain vegetables, a lot of the nutrients get leached into the water. So you lose that. Now, that's good and bad. It's good if you don't want some of those nutrients, like kidney patients. Mm-hmm. It's bad if you need some of those nutrients. Even if you're a kidney patient, you may need to elevate certain vitamins or minerals.
So actually, you might take a cooking technique for broccoli or some other food and actually try to eliminate, like, potassium or phosphorus or something that your kidneys are having trouble with.
Correct. And you do that not just in the cooking process, but you can also do it in your selection of the product. And that sometimes goes, and we talk about that as well in there. So how to choose the right chicken, how to choose the right fish, those things are important. They're not all the same. So, it's not a piece of chicken is a piece of chicken, et cetera. There's enormous differences in how they're raised, how they're processed. And
the different parts of the chicken, the meat is completely different.
Exactly. So we have different parts. We have different processes for raising these, and we have also different cooking processes. So, for instance, when you braise certain meat, and that's a cooking meat in a liquid, without fully covering it. So fully covering it would be to stew or boil. And then when it's maybe half covered, you're braising it and you're bringing out some of the same nutrients you would be in broccoli when you boil it. And that can actually lower the phosphorus levels in, say, a protein. And as long as you don't use all of that liquid, which one of the lines in there is for a chef, that liquid is just pure culinary gold because you really want it. But if you just use less of it, you could actually lower the phosphorus levels in a meat and a protein, any kind of meat. And those are all, and all the information I provide in there is backed up by studies that have been done by multiple doctors. So I try to reinforce this information with people and for professionals especially, so that I'm not just a, chef guy trying to tell a professional, a nutritionist how to properly do their job, because that's not the case at all. I just want to add on to their knowledge.
Quite a range of recipes. It's not just sort of appetizers, entrees, desserts. You have, things like a lemon-lime simple syrup. I mean, that I assume, I don't know, kidney patients are having cocktails, or is this to add to the flavors of the food that you're cooking?
So in a typical recipe book, like you mentioned, they kind of break it down to either meal types or dish types. So here's a bunch of pastas, and here's our meat, here's our fish, or our carne, our seafood. Or they do it in meals, breakfast, lunch, dinner, snack. A lot of times that happens with the kidney patient cookbooks to help them, to guide them if they're looking for something. But I wanted mine to be more of an educational tool. And I know that sounds a little scary as a cookbook, but I provide a lot of information about the specific reasons why this recipe is put in here, but it's mainly so that you can adapt it to certain things you might like. And I'll give you an example. One of the problems with kidney patients, if you become at end stage where your fluid is not being removed from your body naturally, you have to watch your intake of fluids. So drinking cans of soda or other large volumes is really bad, but people don't often have the ability to stay away. And like I said, you've had so much taken away from you now, taking away a coffee from someone who drinks it every day, or sodas for people. So I try to provide alternatives that can try to sneak in and replace that are healthier and better for you. And that's kind of what I've done for many different areas. So drinks in this case.
And you don't have to give up flavor, right? That's part of the key. You don't need a bland diet as a kidney patient?
Probably the biggest complaint I've heard from all the patients I've dealt with for these years is that they try foods in these cookbooks, you know, either produced by a dialysis provider or a nonprofit organization who really make a good effort and they try. But people will try a few recipes and they are bland because there's a lot of salt reduction. So sometimes you just see a recipe, a standard recipe with a, you know, one third of the salt. And there's another section there where I talk about how salt affects taste and what you can do to help out. And it has to do with the taste buds and the activation of those taste buds and when do they get activated. And then, you know, it sounds a little sciencey, but what we do is we try to make it simple for you and, you know, how to help out.
But some people appreciate that science. Again, you're including food science in here for people who want it. And someone who doesn't care about food science might learn something by accident, right?
Yeah, well, I'm hoping that they care about food science a little bit, but you're right. I'm not trying to overload people. I'm trying to give them enough information that it'll keep you interested. And for people who need more, I make it available. So every recipe has a full nutritional chart that follows it, both for each ingredient and for the recipe as a total and for each portion. And then in addition, I have a chart that tells you about the amounts of every essential amino acid. So we break. So if it has protein in it, I give you the essential amino acid breakdown. And that's important because those nine essentials are ones you have to take externally. You have to get from your diet where the other ones can be produced by the body. So the particular amino acids that you need to feed it. And then tells you how much protein is in there. Again, another big factor, both for early stages and for end stage kidney disease.
And so for kidney patients, monitoring fairly exact levels of those is pretty important.
It is important and it can be tedious, but the nutritionist can help a lot. That's really that is for those that are really involved in their own care and also to show nutritionists, hey, this is what's in this recipe and this is how much based on my particular body and my issues, you think this is enough. And it gives the nutritionist the ability to actually see the details. You know, they know the generalities and they do know their patients, but sometimes it helps to see the actual details.
But a lot of work for you as a cookbook author to put in those types of that type of detail graphs and measurement.
It was a lot of work. I hope it's worth it. I hope people find the value there. I think professionals will. I also think it can be a research tool. In other words, just something you keep handy with you to refer to. You know, like you get these ideas, like we're supposed to avoid dairy, but dairy's a group of things, and in just milk in general as a large group between as we were talking about earlier, the fat content, how it's processed, where are the bad things in milk. And how can we help to reduce it? And as you mentioned earlier, flavor being such a big factor, we can then incorporate the elements of how flavor is added to food, how you can piggyback flavors on fats, and how to make sure your fats are the right fats so that they don't have the bad parts for kidney disease. So it sounds complicated, but it really does explain it very simply when I get to a recipe.
Are there any particular ethnic foods around the world that are better for kidney patients than others? Perhaps by accident, or is it really your cookbook picks from, you know, all over the world? Is it India and Mexico, and so you have spices and recipes from all over?
Yeah, that's a result of two things. One, there are differences. Let's start with that. There are differences, and there's a section where I point out some of those differences. And a lot of it has to do with designated origin of product, depending on which language they use, which means that there's control mechanisms for food types in certain parts of the world that are controlled by both the producers and the government. And in the U.S., we're a little lax about that. So the name on there, so I'll give you a good example. You may find you're buying Roquefort cheese, but really you're only buying Roquefort cheese if you buy it in the special caves in France where they make they have the special bacteria that makes the cheese. And everything else, it's supposed to be a name you can't use unless you do that, but the U.S. is a little lax there sometimes. So as far as different parts of the world, there's the difference. But the flavors, really, you want to address to people who have different interests. You know, I didn't want to pigeonhole it, and there's some really good advantages to understanding the food items from different parts of the world and how they can help.
And certainly all kinds of spices at that point. I mean, and these days, maybe compared to when you first opened your restaurant, O'Bagalo's, that was 1991. the availability of spices and things has grown a lot, and we have more options, more fun, more different parts of the world that we're learning about now.
It's really tremendous, and not just the availability, the information, the knowledge. You can really do a lot more now than we could back then with distribution, you know, from getting the proper distribution of those to the guy that's working in the kitchen, you know. So it's been fantastic.
John Vito's with us. Cooking for Your Kidneys is his book. He's also done videos, sort of how to cooking, because he's a chef, how to do dishes. And you were doing some of these before you got your transplant, I think, working on educating people. And those videos are still available also online?
They are. Everything's available on cookingforyourkidneys.com. And this has been a large project, and we just had the option to make these videos to try to find out if this was of interest to people. And what we did them, and they were, and it shows you how to cook a recipe. Talks very, there's some similarities between what we talk about, but in the book we're able to go further and go and create more depth and better understanding. It's hard to create a chart that you can read on a video, you know, with all those details, but you know, gives us that option. So
right. And the book, again, available now. The process of it's self-published, I think you said. So how did that process of figuring out that go, beyond having Greenwood Books as a mentor? You said that you had friends and other people help with the editing, and it's sort of an ongoing editing process because it can be self-published. You can kind of constantly do some editing.
Yeah, that business is really grown as well. Just like we talked about spices, how the availability and how we can get them easier and learn about them, publishing a book is now much more accessible. And I think that's really helpful for anybody who wants to do this, because the process is very long to find either an agent or get a publisher interested. And you know, that's a great avenue to go, but if you really have something that's outside the mainstream or doesn't fit into one of the categories that they find to be profitable, because it's a risk for a publisher to take on a project, so they kind of keep into their lane. You know, this is what we know has been successful, this works, and this is the type that we do, this is what I've learned from communicating with them. But the self-publishing world gives you the opportunity to help to find different avenues, you know, that ones that aren't so popular. And because this crosses over into many of those, in other words, there's a type of book that just is like a mass, you know, hits a lot of people and over a general crowd, and this doesn't fit that. There's the cookbook, you know, lane, you know, if you're a celebrity or, you know, you've owned restaurants, you know, you have a market. But because this crosses over between education and a cookbook and a very particular chronic illness, it's a really narrow lane, and sometimes they're a little maybe less excited about getting into that lane without, you know, knowing what the outcome would be.
Yeah. Well, but again, having self-publishing as an option means that your book is now available for kidney patients and their families, because I think we talked about this the last time we interviewed you. It's not just the kidney patient who's eating. They're often part of a family, maybe kids, maybe, you know, multiple generations, family, friends. What can you eat and not feel like you're having different food because you're the patient, and, you know, that being ostracized in a sense because people don't understand how good food can be. It's also good for your kidneys.
Yeah, that's very true. You know, you find the isolation factor that you hit on, not just in the dinner table if you're with a family and you have to cook a separate meal, but that becomes really a major part of your life because you get isolated and everything else as well. You're ill. People aren't aware you're ill. It's hard to tell you're ill. It's one of the, you know, those chronic hidden diseases. So, and because of what you have to do to accommodate the illness, it creates further isolation. But the point I make in the book is, and in also the recipes, is that the meals are good. It doesn't mean you have to have kidney disease to appreciate it and enjoy them. So I try to make things that you could cook for everybody. I even talked to a friend yesterday, and they have the same issue where, you know, he has to cook his own meals, and the, you know, where the family has to cook for the rest of, you know, somebody else cooks for the rest of the family. But that's not the case with this. All of these can be they don't even have to be adapted. They're just good for anybody. It just gives you a little more information about how to make it healthy and healthier, not just for the patient, but actually for everybody in the room.
I'm glad carrot cake is in here because that's one of my favorite things.
Is it really? Yeah, I always talk about that because carrot cake always scared me when I was younger because I thought, well, it's cake. Why would I want to eat vegetables? But I've learned to really enjoy it, and I've adjusted it. You know, traditionally it has nuts, and nuts are really bad for kidney patients. So we've replaced that with, say, craisins, and we take away the oil, and we use homemade applesauce, which is a very common replacement when you're trying to reduce fat in a dessert. So,
and a delicious one, right? I mean, it works really well.
It does, especially if you make your own, where you have the ability to enhance some of those wonderful flavors that you might want in there. You know, none like the jarred ones, which we I think are a little blander and saltier, to be honest with you.
And add sugar, you know, other things like that. And then one of the sections of your book is on whole wheat grains, which, again, have exploded in availability and are more and more available. But how does that affect a kidney patient, and do they need or can they tolerate the whole grains? How does that vary among patients?
Well, that's a really important factor. One of the first things you learn when you become a kidney patient, or at least at the stage five or end stage when you're on dialysis, is that standard wheat bread, meaning something that's made with the three parts of the wheat, is very high in phosphorus. So they tell you to use white flour only for everything, and that's all endosperm. It has less phosphorus than if you used all three parts, the germ and the bran, as well as the endosperm. So they thought, well, we reduce the phosphorus because that's bad for kidney patients, and just eat white flour. And that's been the ongoing statement. But there's a lot of research being done now which is suggesting that the other two parts that make up the entire wheat flour do have high levels of phosphorus, but they're under lock and key, meaning it doesn't get absorbed in the body unless you find the key to unlock them. And it doesn't have it, and most foods don't have it. I'm not going to give you the details, but they're in the book. But so, in other words, unless you're eating a wheat, unless you're eating a bean sandwich on wheat bread, you're probably not going to unlock all of the phosphorus that's in wheat flour.
Now, the enzymes or amino acids or things that are in, yeah, things you're eating with it that help with the unlocking.
And even that, we don't have the research. I can't find the research yet. It's just really a proposal. So they say that there's these phylates in there, and you know that can't be unlocked unless you have phylase. I think that's the right way it goes. And but it's not in wheat or in the wheat bran, you know, total. So it doesn't absorb in the body. Again, there's studies, and I'm not trying to advocate that you go against the instructions of your nutritionist and your doctor, but I'm pointing this information out to people and doing the calculations to show you that if these studies are true, and it seems to me they are from finding multiple people who've done the research, that you actually lower the level of phosphorus by eating whole wheat flour instead of white flour, which is an interesting and a big change, even though others have brought it up. But I'm not the first one to bring this up, certainly. But I haven't seen the calculations that I've done to show how much difference it can be.
And basically, it goes with any level of nutrition, pretty much anything, actually, not just our bodies and healthy eating. But we think we have some simple answer, like just avoid whole wheat and eat white bread and you'll solve your problems. Or I've read some about milk. You know, if you're drinking skim milk, you don't have the fats that help your body to absorb the calcium. We think the answers are simple, and hopefully your book and, you know, science as it progresses, we realize there are nuances to all of these, and that's what's important. Whenever you hear a simple answer to something, it's probably not right. And you need to be curious and look further, and like you are doing, ask questions.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, dairy is a big issue. We approach that because it's a big factor for kidney patients. But I break it down a little and show you where is the phosphorus in dairy and how can we reduce it. But every time you do something like that, you're going to increase something else that's could be problematic. So I can reduce the phosphorus, but you often increase the fat, and that scares people. But what they forget is that fat is what carries flavor. It does not only have flavor itself, but that's how you infuse a dish. So you want to take basil and create it, that flavor. You just warm it up in a heavy fat product, whether that's butter or cream or oil, and then that kind of distributes throughout the whole dish. So you're getting all those flavors. And often, because of the fat level, you don't need as much of the fat because it really explode the dish with flavor. So when you use things like skim milk in a dairy, you know, patients really shouldn't be drinking that or using that. But as an example, the flavor of other ingredients isn't going to carry through because it has significantly less to zero fat. So you may end up using more of it to get the flavor you want.
John Vito's with us. Cooking for Your Kidneys is his book. And you know, I still miss your soups from O'Bagalo's. You had some awesome soups.
Yeah, thanks. Some of those soup recipes are on some of my websites for cooking. Not in a kidney one, but on my other Food and Stories one, where you can find a few of the soup recipes. But I've avoided that here in this book, and that has to do with the volume of fluid that you often consume when you have soup. And if you're a dialysis patient or have end stage, you realize that too much fluid can become a real problem. So even though I love them, I really avoided them until I had my transplant.
Just want you to know that some of us remember them and with fond memories and appreciate your work as a chef. And so hopefully you'll be doing some speaking at conferences for nutrition and kidneys, kidney health around, hopefully around the country, right? And as you work to get your book out there?
Well, you know, it's all a marketing point, you know, in marketing situation now. I'm trying to reach people. I want to get some feedback. I want them to look over. I've already done a few speaking engagements. I have done a webinar for nutritionists out on the West Coast. A local group I spoke to when they had one of their continued learning events. But I would like to do that because I'd like to interact with the nutritionists and others in the profession.
You'll learn more from them.
Exactly. So that we can kind of work together to see how I can actually help them and how I can provide whatever knowledge I have to the bigger goal, which is to help patients.
Well, again, the book is available now locally, and John has a diverse background for this. He's been the patient. He's had a transplant, and that has been a couple years in doing well. Owned a restaurant, worked as a chef for many. How many years have you been a chef?
I worked 21 years owning my own restaurants and cooking.
Yeah. So some great experience, and thanks for pulling all this together into the cookbook. Yeah, we didn't talk about the recipe testing and stuff that goes for cookbooks, but yeah, they're a lot of work, right? I mean, people have the impression that you just put together your best recipes, but beyond the data that's in here and nutrient data and things, the recipe testing is crucial.
Oh, it is. I mean, you spend a lot of time trying to figure out what's affecting it, adjusting ingredients, small amounts, for flavor, and most of them it's just for flavor. But now every time I adjust something, I've got to also get all the nutrient information, and I have to provide that and try to balance the that's too much versus this is too little. And then sometimes you just have to throw the whole recipe out because I can make it taste good, but I can't make it good for patients.
And you know, you're a chef, so you know, doing a recipe is different. You need this so that you know, the average person can create these recipes rather than a chef.
Yeah, I really tried to make them as simple as I could because, one, knowing what it's like to be on dialysis or to have a chronic illness, whether you're, you know, in the early stages or in the late stages, it reduces your energy and your ability to focus and your time. So I wanted to make them simple enough, but I wanted to really jack up the flavor. And found ways to do that without incorporating too many of the negative ingredients for patients.
All right. Well, John, you know, it's 269 pages of information, and will change some people's lives as food is such a central part of culture and at least my everyday happiness. Some people just think of food as fuel. But they need to care about what's going into their kidneys, too. And so, again, ton of work into this. And it's got to be kind of nice for you to see it, you know, glossy cover. And, you know, it's a book.
Yeah, it is. I don't know if you've ever heard about it, but someone who tries to make, you know, produce a book, you know, there's that the first day you open the box that you get your books, and it's pretty exciting and it's nerve-wracking, and I'm panicking about certain phrases and words and, you know, things of that nature. But there's an overall, it's been a good sense of accomplishment from many years of work.
All right, John, thank you for your time, and congratulations.
Well, thanks, and thanks for having me. I appreciate it.